Our Father in heaven, we are thankful again for this day and thankful to be here and thankful for all the precious things that you gave to us. And now we do ask in the name of Jesus our Lord that you would provide spiritual food for us all tonight, that we would be encouraged in the way of life through this good book. Amen. All right, let's go ahead and read chapter 11. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Now I want to apologize ahead of time. There is a great plenty of depth to this chapter that I don't know that anybody has ever exhausted. I read four major commentaries this afternoon on this chapter, and they all seem to have a measure of confusion in what they said. So tonight, as I go through this chapter, I promise, based on what I know to be true about the Word of God, only to give you things that are true. But I do not promise to understand everything that Solomon is writing. We will talk about things that are absolutes in the Christian life, but we may fail sometimes as we go through here to understand exactly what Solomon is using, the illustrations that he's using in this chapter, what he actually is intending by them, because it gets rather deep. If you listen carefully as we go through the chapter, I promise, if you are somebody who has high hopes for things in this life, if you're a selfish person, I promise to be painful to you tonight. I promise. If you are here with the intent, the sole and only intent of serving God, I think you'll love everything that this chapter has to say. But what I want to give you, Solomon is wrapping his book to a conclusion. He's going to come to the conclusion in the next chapter, but he is finishing his final thoughts about earth in this chapter, where he is heading to that conclusion. And what Solomon gives us in chapter 11 is basically what I would call the recipe for success on this earth. But we have been talking back and forth throughout the whole book of Ecclesiastes. We have been talking about this earth, what works, what doesn't work, etc., etc. We are now pulling eternity into earth in chapter 11. And we are not just talking about time in chapter 11, but we are now realizing throughout this chapter that there is a whole lot more to time than time. And so what he is giving us as a recipe for a successful life in this earth is relative to the fact that there is an eternity. So, that being said, let's look at some of the things that he's bringing out. We'll do our best. He says, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now, I'll tell you the truth. This is one of the verses that nobody in their commentaries really seems to understand exactly what he is talking about. In fact, a couple of them suggest that he is talking about sowing rice. And I am almost certain that he is not. They think that he is talking about sowing rice because when you sow rice, you put it into the water. And so you're out scattering your rice in the water and you expect a harvest later. I don't think that's what he's talking about. I, for one, Brandon's a good geographical person. I don't think that they grow rice anywhere near Israel. I don't think rice... wild rice they do throw into water. Okay. That's right, wild rice is grass. So, my interpretation of this verse for many years has just been, you know, when you walk up to the lake and you toss a stick in, it comes back to shore. And he's using the idea that the things that are tossed out onto the water eventually float back to shore. He's using that idea as an illustration of the fact that when we do the right thing with the things that God gave us, it eventually returns to us. Now, nobody in all the history of the world seems to think that my idea of that verse is correct, because they don't say a word about it. I am not here to tell you exactly what Solomon did mean physically, but I know absolutely for certain what he meant spiritually. Yes, Noah. How will it return to you? If you give your bread to the hungry man, how will it come back to you? It will come back to you for one simple reason only, because there is a God in heaven who controls the things on earth. That is the reason. That is the reason that the Bible gives that it will happen. So, anyway, he's using a physical illustration to create in our hearts an understanding of the spiritual truth. He should have used a physical illustration that we could understand. But he goes on to explain in verse 2, give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Now, catch it now. When you give a portion of your stuff to 7 and also to 8, you're giving it to them because something hasn't gone perfectly in their lives. But when you don't know what evil shall be upon the earth, it's something for your life that you don't know about. You give to somebody else's need because someday you're going to have a need. Okay? I did see one very amazing point that one of the commentaries said very well that I read this morning when he says, cast thy bread. You know our government system that we have today where they gather from the people to give to the people is not fulfilling this passage. Okay? This is something we do not help the poor because we pay our taxes and they live on welfare. Okay, that's not what this is talking about. We help the poor when we give our bread to them, not when a government takes some bread that is not theirs and gives to them. That is not God's plan. It was never God's plan. In fact, very, very, very clearly throughout the law of the Old Testament, God set up His plan for how to deal with situations like this. And it is completely an individual thing that God left for the children of Israel to follow in His law. It was something that we, as a human race, are to take care of the needs of the human race individually, person to person. So, when we are looking at this, you know, I have had... Yes? What do you mean by the church? The individual people in the church or the church as a whole? Well, the New Testament does go through that a little bit, telling us when not to make the church as a whole responsible for things, instead making individual people responsible for things first until there is no individual to meet the need, and then with widows specifically, what the New Testament is talking about, then the church takes responsibility as a corporate body, let's say. So, obviously, there's going to be some different scenarios in life. But back to my story, I've had people come to me before and say, you know, we want to do something for such and such a person, and this person has this need, and I want your church to help with this. In fact, I've had people... I don't want to talk too loud here. I asked one person one time when he came to me and said, so-and-so has a need. And wondered if your church would like to help. But I pried him a little bit. I said, how much do you expect this thing to cost that you're doing? And he hemmed and hawed, and then I think he came in around $3,000 he was going to spend. I happen to know the person who was asking me. I have no clue exactly what their personal finances are, but I am 100% certain that if they had gotten it in their heart to do the thing that they wanted, they would not have had any difficulty whatsoever with producing $3,000 out of their pocket. Now, just think about that for a minute. If God has put something on your heart that should be done, go do it. It's your pocket God is looking into when He's talking to you. If God's asking something of you, go do it. Not to say that there's never a time to go to your church people, your friends, and say, this project is a big project. Anybody interested in helping? You know, maybe you want to join us. But we'll get into this further later. There's a reason that we use our stuff to do the things that we see that need to be done. Because when we use our things, the things that God gave us, is when the blessing of God is promised back to us. Okay? If we are not willing to give what God gave to us, then the blessing of God that has been promised to those people is not promised to us. So verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. Now, again, I'm having just a touch of trouble following Solomon through everything that he goes through in here. He seems to split his thoughts here and there. But I'm going to go with my best judgment on where he is going. And if I get off of where he's going, I still promise to tell you only things that are absolutely biblical and true to life. So when he says, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves, I believe here that Solomon is comparing the cloud to the people. You Remember, you, what are you? What did God make your life? What has Solomon been telling you you are? Vanity. You are vanity. What is a cloud? Vanity. What James says in the New Testament, that our life is like a vapor. Okay, vapor, cloud, same thing. If our life is like a, if our life is like a cloud, now here we are back in the Old Testament, and the clouds are being set to look like us. And he says, comparing our pockets to the pockets of the cloud, he says, if the clouds have water in them, they empty themselves. What do we do with our pockets? What are you doing with the things that God gave you? If you were a cloud, you would empty yourself. Now remember, Jesus also talks about the clouds when he says that God sends his rain on the just and on the unjust alike. And we oftentimes, when we think about things, when we think about our lives and when we look at other people's lives, we get into this stingy attitude that this is my life. I have these things to do. I have this job to work. I have this family to take care of. I have these payments to make. And these people out here who've messed everything up, they are a drain on my life. They take everybody down. They want everybody's stuff. They can't get anything straight. And God sits up in heaven and he says, I have a great plenty. He says, I can afford to continue giving the ungodly my rain because I'm not short on rain. And then, comparing man to his rain, he creates man as a cloud. It's a vapor. That when the cloud gets water, it empties itself. Now, what happens to a cloud that empties itself? It disappears. Clouds that rain dissipate. They eventually use themselves up and die. And I do not doubt for a moment here that what Solomon is bringing to light in this chapter is the fact that life on this earth, for the people who are going to live according to wisdom, life on this earth is meant to be taken as a gift from God to the people. Yes? Are clouds without water? Yes. Yes. Now, stop and think about something for a minute. We talk about the difference between a sunny day and a cloudy day. You know, for a cloud, there is no such difference. You know, when the cloud is pouring rain on the earth, the cloud sees the sun. And I do declare that every person who has entered into the Spirit of Jesus Christ, who receives from God and gives to man, can always see the sun. It's the life of a fulfilled person. It's the life of success. It's the life of somebody who has entered into the Spirit of God, where they know that what they hold in themselves, what they hold dear as their life, they know it is from God, not for themselves. It is from God for the people. And so, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. But then he abruptly changes the subject, and he says, and if the tree fall toward the south, or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. Now what in common do clouds emptying water and trees tipping over have to do together? Except as he is talking about the life of human beings. And you know, this is where I believe he's bringing eternity into this passage. Because every person on earth, while you are a person, You have a choice of how you are going to live. But everybody has to reckon with death. And as you choose to live is the choice of how you die. And it's when the tree falls that everything is settled. If you were the kind of a person who lived according to God's word, when you die, the direction of your life is settled. The direction of your death, it's over. Where the tree falls is where it ends. If you were the kind of a person who obeyed God, in death, you die as an obedient person. If you are the kind of a person who disobeyed God, in death, you end as a disobedient person, and it's over. Where the tree falls is where it ends. There's no changing the fact that a tree falls towards the north or the south. It only gets to fall once. Now I want to take just a small break from Ecclesiastes, and I want to go and read some of the things that are written elsewhere in the scriptures, because we're going to somewhat change the subject again in the next verse. Let's start with Deuteronomy chapter 15. And I'm just going to, for the sake of the context, start at the beginning. At the end of every 7 years thou shalt make a release, and this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lendeth aught unto his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. Of a foreigner thou mayest exact it again, but that which is thine with thy brother thine hand shall release. Save when there be no poor among you, for the Lord shall greatly bless thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, only if thou carefully hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments which I command thee this day. For the Lord thy God blesseth thee as he promised thee, and thou shalt lend unto many nations, but thou shalt not borrow, and thou shalt reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over thee. If there be among you a poor man, or of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother, but thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he wanteth. Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and thine eye be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him naught. And he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be a sin unto thee. Thou shalt surely give him, and thine heart shall not be grieved when thou givest unto him, because that for this thing the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thy works, and in all that thou puttest thine hand unto. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother, to the poor, and to thy needy in thy land. Moses here speaking gives them the plan that every 7 years, anything that has been lent to their brother that has not yet been returned becomes the property of the person to whom it was lended to. And then, as if he instantly knows the human heart, he responds to the problem that that is going to create. Because when year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 have passed, and the next year is going to be the release, and a man comes to you telling you of a predicament he's in and he needs help, and you say, well, now if I lend to him now, he will have no time to pay me back before the release comes. And so you say, you're going to say then, I can't lend right now because the release is just around the corner and I'm going to lose it. Does the Bible say anything about whoever seeks to save his life shall lose it? And whoever seeks to lose his life shall find it? And so he says, if the year of release, I'm going to add to his words just a bit here, if the year of the release is tomorrow, open your hand wide, he says. open your hand wide. You're not going to spare anything. You're not going to say, can you come back next week? So you've got 7 years to pay me back. It's open your hand wide. Because it is for this reason that God says He will bless you in everything that you do. It's for that reason. If we look at Proverbs chapter 19, Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 17, says, He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which He hath given him, that which He hath given, will He repay him again. It's always a risk when you lend something to man, because they may break it, they may use it up, they may damage it, they may run into serious trouble and never be able to return it. When you lend to a human being, you are at risk. But when you lend to God, who created the entire world, owns all of heaven, has unlimited riches and unlimited abilities, you are not in any way, shape, or form at risk. And God says in this verse, if you have pity on the poor, you lend to the Lord, and He will pay him again. God keeps track of every time that a person gives something to the poor, and God says, because that person was my person and you took care of him, I owe you. Now the interesting thing is, when you're lending to God, the one thing that God has never said is on what day that money is being returned to you. When we get on God's program, we get on God's program God's way. And many, 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 many times the reward for the things that we do in this life is paid back in eternal reward. Though God has still promised never to let us down in taking care of our physical needs on this earth. He has not promised us riches, but He has promised us care. So while He has promised us care, many times the reward is in the next life. Also, Proverbs chapter 11. Verse 24, Solomon says, there is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. I don't think these verses need any comment. You scatter and increase. It is what happens in sowing. It is what happens in all farming. It is what happens in business. You spend to get. You sow to reap. And people, there are people on this earth who do not understand that principle. We call them stingy. And they live in poverty, either physically or spiritually, or in a thousand other ways. They live in poverty because they never learn that it costs something to get something. And you hold on to the things that you have, and it impoverishes you. It says here that it tendeth to poverty. But the liberal soul is the one that shall be made fat. If we go also to Matthew chapter 20, Matthew chapter 20 and verse 25 says, but Jesus called them unto him and said, ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." So here we have a cloud that's full of rain. He came with the intent purpose of giving everything that he had to somebody else. And then he calls us to live like him. We are here not to be ministered unto, but to minister. And so we go on here. Same subject in a way, but slightly different. Because I think that he changes here from giving to work in verse 4. When he says, "He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap." People who don't do things because there is a potential something in their way are unsuccessful people in life. If there is a reason for you not to do something that ought to be done, that reason must be gotten through by any imaginable way you can get through it. It makes no difference what the problem is. If it is something that God gave you to do, you got to get through it. It cannot stand between you and the work. Now God had given to man way back in the garden the fact that we were going to take care of ourselves. He wasn't going to grow us a garden. We were going to take care of ourselves by sowing and reaping. We were going to be responsible for feeding ourselves. And there are certain people who get up in the morning and they look out the window and the weather is bad. And so they can't get the job done that day. But Solomon points out the very simple, true fact that there's always bad weather. If you observe, if you get out of bed in the morning and look out the window to make a decision of if you will or won't do something that day, you won't. That's what he says. If you're looking at something to make a decision if you will or won't do something, the answer is going to be no, I won't. Because there's always going to be something to stop you. So if you're looking at the wind, you don't sow. And if you're looking at the clouds, you don't reap. And if you're looking at the wind and the clouds, you don't eat. He doesn't add that, but I will add that. Because it is only through sowing and reaping that we eat. So verse 5, he says, "As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God, who maketh all." There is millions of things that we human beings don't understand. And he brings just one into our light here. When there's a girl carrying around a baby, and inside that baby is growing, forming to be a complete human being, the only thing he mentions in here is bones. We don't know how it's happening. And Solomon is simply saying here, to the best of my ability to discern, he is simply saying, if you can't figure out the simplest things in life that are happening day by day all around you, neither do you know how God works. He is not giving us this chapter here so that we understand how God works. He is giving us this chapter here so that we'll put our trust in God and take Him at His word for how He works. Because when we trust God, we obey Him, whether or not it looks like the right thing to do or not. So his conclusion now from verse 4 begins in verse 6. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thy hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. Again, we're fighting now. We're fighting with the human resistance to the will of God. We don't want to work from sun up to sundown. We don't want to work that much. We want to have some play time. We want to take a week off and pay our bills in spite of the fact that we're too broke. I have had so many employees struggling financially all the time. Can't hardly make their bills. These little kids who have absolutely no idea how to handle money. And so they're living at home with no expenses but can't make their bills. And their bills must consist of things like eating out and cell phones because they have none other. But they can't make their bills. And then they come and they say, can I have this next week off? And I look at them in the face and I say, why are you asking for time off when you're short on money? How are you going to handle that? But you know, we have this belief that is our right to have playtime on earth. Let me just tell you something right now. That's not the path to success. You don't get success by playing. You get success by working. And so, it's not just that we shouldn't be looking at the wind and the clouds to decide if we're going to work. The actual fact of the matter is, regardless of the wind and the clouds, we should be sowing in the morning and in the evening. And the afternoon comes between. The morning, the afternoon, and the evening. Why? Because, you know, you don't know what's going to be on the earth. You don't know what's coming. You don't know which one of the things that your hand does is going to prosper. I have read a number of different quotes from some people who are highly successful in life, in earthly things, not spiritual. And they all seem to run in the same vein that it usually seems like about 1 out of every 10 things that you do is successful. It seems like when you think of success, you've got to try 10 times before you do something that works. Many people give up on number one. But this chapter here, we are not, when we're going out, okay, let's just say we sit down with a piece of paper and a calculator and we figure out how many meals a year there are and how many people there are in our family and how much food can be grown off an acre. And we sit down and we figure out, well, I'm going to need this much to feed my family. This is what I'm going to have to do to feed my family. Now, we don't think in these thoughts right now, but we think in exactly the same vein when we go apply for a job and we say, how much are you paying an hour? And that how much are you paying an hour is what our checks equal. And our checks are what pay our bills. And so if we're going to get 4 checks a month or 2 checks a month or 1 check a month, we want to know what that number is because we want to know if that equals what we need. And so we look at that and we say, yes, this works. But remember now what happened in the beginning of the chapter. We're supposed to be sharing. And we are not looking at accomplishing for ourselves what we need to get by and then deciding that's enough. Because God has called every single person in this room to be a link between God and fallen humanity. Where we are God's representation on earth. Where we take the things that God gave us and we give them to other people as they have need. That's what God made us to be. Now you say, we're in the United States of America and there's too many rich people around us. It's hard to find somebody who isn't poor that we could actually help. Actually, even the poor people in our country usually have food. And if you're giving money to many of the poor people in our country, all you're doing is buying their next pack of cigarettes, which we should not do. But the fact of the matter is, we are not speaking simply of physical food in this chapter, because what we are talking about here is the blessing of God on the souls of men. And every single person in this room has a life to live. You have a life to choose what you're going to do with it. And you can choose to use that life for things that benefit yourself and make yourself happy, or you can choose to give that life over to the needs of the human race. That's the calling that God has on every single person here. And if you can't find a poor person in your town to give money to, you can find needy souls by the scores. Every door that exists in the streets of town, there's somebody there who's falling apart, and they need something that only we have. And it takes, oftentimes it takes more energy to bless a person with spiritual things than it takes to bless them with physical things. And I have heard so many people complain, I'm just used up. I have no energy left. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what Jesus did when He came. When He came, He said He had no leisure to eat. That's the illustration we look at the beginning of the chapter when we see clouds, they empty themselves. It is not given to us on this earth to seek for the things that create pleasure, to seek for a life of fulfillment. It is our business on this earth to seek to be like God. But there's more. Because it is only the people who enter into this fully, entirely, without reserve, handing their life over to God, saying, take me and do anything you want with me, whether I like it or don't. It is only the people who do that who enter into the full joy of the blessing of God. Nobody but the people who live that kind of a lifestyle know the kind of joy that God can give to the people who serve Him. This is where we can look back over our lives as we have in the places that we have walked. And though everything was hard and stressful and maybe we were in poverty or you name it, we look back and we say, but I feel happy. I feel happy. Something is right about what I'm doing. There's one other kind of success in this life that Solomon goes into next. There's a different kind of success. Very similar, but different. He says, truly the light is sweet. The light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. You can, if you want to, grasp the principle of what Solomon is saying only on an earthly sense. If you want to grasp it just as something that we can do on this earth, if you want to go out and become a very hard worker and you want to put yourself to things and you want to pass up everybody you know around you, you want to run faster and work harder and do more, you can pursue that for yourself. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, don't forget the fact that those years will end in every single case. every single case. Don't forget the days of darkness, for they shall be many. Now, whether Solomon in this verse is referring to old age when you're sick on your deathbed, or whether he's referring to eternity, or whether he's referring to both, it doesn't make a lot of difference, because we can trust from the Word of God that even if we get the opportunity to live a very successful, happy, healthy life, not regarding the things of God, what are we going to do when the problems come, when we need God to take care of us? What are we going to do when life comes to an end and there's no answer? What are we going to do when we have to leave behind everything that we gained for ourselves and there's no eternity besides judgment? So he says, "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thy heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." If you choose to be one of those people who looks at the life ahead of you and says, "I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this." Many young people are almost forced to plan their whole life out. You need to go to college. You need to get this kind of training. You need to get this kind of a job. You need to get something that's going to make you happy. You need to travel. You need to see things. You know it. You only have one real need. You only have one real need, and that is to be in the will of God. Some of those other things can be blessings if you're in the will of God sometimes. But if you want to take the fact that you are a young person and you have ability to do things and you have ability to be something and you have ability to go somewhere because God has given you lots of health and strength and intelligence, etc., etc., he says, rejoice if God has given you that. And let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. And go ahead and walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Because God has never called any human being to that kind of a life. God has never called a human being to live life on this earth to please themselves. He has called every one of us to be responsibly thinking of the future, our future. Our future when the dark days come on this earth, and our future when we stand before God to be judged for the things that were done on this earth. And it is because we are supposed to be thinking of those things that he gave us this chapter, going through the fact that it is our job to take care of the people around us, both by giving to them of our stuff and by working to get those things that are needed to give. There is a lifestyle here that God is calling all of his people to be people of purpose, people of success, but not at all like the world calls success. In the faith of God, where we are not looking at what we can get for ourselves, but what we can do for the people around us. How we can take care of people. How we can take care of our family. How we can be leaders among those around us who need our help. And from here, we finally get to the end of Solomon's story about life. When he comes straight to the point in chapter 12, and he says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Right now, when you are a young person with everything ahead of you, and if you were a fool when you were a young person, right now when you're an old person, right now, remember your Creator. Because it is God who made you, it is God you are going to see, and it is God who is going to require of you to be what He made you to be. He made you to be a cloud of blessing, getting from the sun. Where does the cloud get the water from? The sun. The sun is the creator of the clouds. Without the sun, there would be no clouds. We get our blessing from God, and we give God's blessing to the people. That's what life on earth, successful life on earth, consists of. And that is what every single person in this room is called to be. Whether or not that means a traveling preacher who goes across the world and does nothing but preach, or, like this chapter actually talks about, you know, we oftentimes get this messed up because we say, I feel called of God. And every time anyone says, I feel called of God, they always say they feel called of God to go do something. It's to be a missionary here, or to be an evangelist there, or to plant churches here. But you know, the calling of God in this chapter is just to work. The calling in this chapter isn't to go to China, it's to go to work. We go to work, there's people all around us, we take it. Now, I'm not gonna deny the fact that many times people should leave home and travel the world to take the gospel somewhere with them. But that is the calling of God on a few of His people. What He talks about in this chapter is the calling of God on all of His people. All of His people are supposed to be like clouds that have water, but that do not store or retain that water. We don't save that water. We don't, as the expression is, save that water for a rainy day. If we've got water, we disperse that water. We have nothing to do with that water but rain it on somebody. We have no other purpose for being a cloud. The reason that we are a cloud is to water the ground. We're not a storage tank. Many Christians never learn that. And they live this life. Everything that God has given into their hands, they live this life protecting it. Taking care of it, keeping it safe, keeping it for themselves, because they say they don't. You never know when you're going to get another one. I can't afford another one. I can't afford to buy. You know what? When God is the giver, asks for the stuff He gave us to be given to Him, promises to take care of us. Why do we sit and wonder so often if he will actually take care of us if we give away something He gave us? Why do we sit and worry about that? Entering into this spirit in Christianity will take a church from being dead to alive. Alive and happy and joyful. But there is two parts. You work and you give. There are too many people that always jump on one side or the other. They can be the kind of a person that can work really hard, get a lot done, but they don't enter into the giving of their lives to somebody else. Or they can be the kind of a person who really enters into the idea of giving their lives away to somebody else, but they're not willing to work to do it. Neither one of those two things are very successful. We need to have God's whole picture where we're able to work hard with our lives and able to take the things that work can do and give them to somebody who needs them. That's what we want. This is the call of God. But for tonight, we will dismiss.